Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Am I turned on? Okay. We're continuing our thoughts on non-resistance, and as Lawrence was talking, I was thinking it would be interesting in about a month from now to have him share on this topic, because, you know, non-resistance sounds great. It's easy to say when we live here in our comfortable, safe country. And it would be interesting to, I know that our non-resistance would be tested a lot more if we lived, at least in different ways, if we lived in a country like Iraq. All right, this morning we want to talk about practical non-resistance. And then we want to talk about reasons why people don't practice non-resistance. I think it's important to look at that. And we don't have a lot of time, but I welcome your thoughts. But we're not going to have time to, you know, discuss in great depth a number of things. Another thing about practical non-resistance is that non-resistance is not necessarily, there's not necessarily a clear line in the sand that says this is non-resistant and this isn't. Well, I guess there is. There's non-resistance is over here and resistance is over here. And what I'm trying to say is that there's some gray areas in the middle. There's some areas in the middle that maybe are okay, but maybe there's other areas in the middle right beside that actually lead to resistance. And so the things that we say today, some of them I think are clearly right and wrong, and some you may think are right or wrong, and there's others that the next person may feel comfortable with. And I'm going to use an example of what I'm trying to say. In 1940, if you worked in a factory that made bullets, you could say, well, I'm non-resistant. These bullets are for moose hunting. But you full well knew that almost all the bullets made in 1940 were not for moose hunting. That's an example. It could be right, but it was used for something that was wrong. And that's what I'm thinking about. There's things today that come in that category. We talked 2 weeks ago about some basic principles of non-resistance, and they're up on the screen again. And so take the gray area that you encounter and think about it in the light of those principles. Does it contradict any of them? They're clear teachings from God's word. Love your enemies, resist not evil, revenge is forbidden, return good for evil, generosity. My kingdom is not of this world. Those that take the sword will perish with the sword. We are sheep in the midst of wolves. We preach the gospel of peace, the sovereignty of God, and the focus of the Great Commission on winning souls. So think about those. I don't think that's necessarily an exhaustive list. I think there's other things that could be added to that list. But that's a good start. And if there's a gray area, think about it along with that list of principles that we discussed. All right, what comes to your mind as far as some practical areas of non-resistance that you face or that we face today? Don't delay. If you have something, say it. We don't have a lot of time. What comes to your mind? We got one up here. Okay.
I think injustice is tests.
Injustice? All right. So injustice is a great subject. And injustice, I'm not sure how to even condense that. Because injustice can be the cause of wars. It can be unjust when someone is out there stealing gas out of your tank. out of your gas tank. It could, you know, injustice is broad. And what did Jesus say about injustice and our response to injustice in general? Where's the verse that I was going to have? 1 Peter 3:19, for it is thankworthy if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently. But if, when ye do well and suffer for it, ye take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving an example that we should follow in his steps. You know, we're going to actually talk about some things that are injustice. And let's jump right into it. So, what would you do if you're a father and someone breaks into your house and wants to harm your family? Is that injustice? That's the sort of the classic question. What would you do? We don't have much time to talk about this. What would be the right thing to do? Ray? Sorry, what would you do, Ray? Okay, what would you do? Give it to Ray.
I don't know. It has never happened. But I know this, that depending what the nature of, like if they wanted to steal our belongings, that would be one thing. If they wanted to violate my children, that would be quite another. And I really don't know what I would do. I don't think that I could do more. Like, I think God's warriors are stronger than I am, like when I can think about it rationally.
Mm-hmm. You say God's warriors are stronger than you are. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. So what would, Jonathan?
Now this might come out more as a question than an answer, but I was pondering this recently. You know, for our children, let's say our two-year-old that's just out of control, you know, we would restrain them. We would physically restrain them at times where it's needed. And there's a clear line between that and assaulting them. Right? Is there a principle there that could apply no matter what the age of the person is? Because frankly, there's some 50-year-olds that act like 2-year-olds as well. And would there be a right way of restraining that person? Let's say coming in between that person and the object, putting myself in harm's way, but also physically restraining that person, not assaulting him, not going to that extent. But like I said, it's more a question maybe than an answer, but something I've been thinking about.
All right, does anyone have an answer? So, the thief is there. Is it okay to perform your judo skills and subdue him? So,
I think, again, the difference would be if he's trying to take your material possessions, I think you may as well just let him take them. If it's physical harm to your family, I guess it's definitely a good question, but I for myself don't think I could just stand passively by and watch.
All right. Anyone else want to comment on that?
I don't have judo skills, but if you do, would it be wrong for me to call you to come and exercise them?
That's going into another subject.
Well, basically, I'm leading up to the question where, I mean, I think most of us would call the law immediately. Mm-hmm. And I would say, I guess, personally, I do think that if the right thing to do is to do, like to call down the armies of heaven, I think I would do that. I do not trust myself that I wouldn't do more than that.
Mm-hmm. So, on that very subject, What does anyone think Jesus would do? Jesus knows judo. And actually better than that. What do you think Jesus would do? I think we actually know, don't we? However, like Jonathan's, back to Jonathan's point, we restrain our two-year-old. And I think that my opinion is there's a few cases where possibly a strong arm will end the assault. And maybe that's a restraint, maybe that's sitting on him, maybe that's tying his hands together if you're bigger than he is. But in no way is it inflicting physical harm, in my opinion. And on that subject, I did hear something that a bishop that some of us know said to someone that was, it was a young man, a teenager that was molested by an older man. The bishop told the young man, "You should have punched him in the nose." Is that right? He said, "This was it was two people from the church." He said, "That might have been what it took to wake that man up and say, 'I'm going to stop doing, what I'm doing is wrong.'" I don't know. Is that the intent? I'm not sure about that. But I highly respect most things that this bishop says. It's that one. It was a very new thought to me.
I think there is a difference between death and damage. Like,
there is, yeah. There is, but I guess back to my point at the beginning, we have to be very, very careful, because if you go, you could take that to the point where here's someone out to molest you. Well, you can shoot his legs, but you don't want to kill him. And there's this whole thing, yes, I agree, that there's a place for restraint, but at what point are we crossing that line where we're actually violating God's intent? We need to think about these things. Every situation is different, too. And it's hard for us to... we can't make a standard and say you can go this far, you can punch the guy, but that's it, no more, because every situation is different. And in a lot of cases, whether you know judo or whether you are going to punch or whatever it's going to be, a lot of cases the person doing the assault has more firepower than you do. And in a case like that, we all know that we have to commit ourselves completely to God. All right. I was looking at the front benches of the older people here and thinking some of them could tell us about their days in the conscientious objector camps. But doing some math, I'm realizing that anyone that spent time in conscientious objector camps are at least 90. And so we need to rely on history. But there's lots of stories of people that applied during times of war in North America many years ago. There's lots of stories of people that applied for conscientious objector status. And what was the criteria for being accepted? There were people that were denied status. And why would they have been denied? Does anyone know any of those stories? Well, what they did is they looked at the person's life, in some cases anyhow. You couldn't just say, "I go to such and such a church and they don't allow war, so I can't do it." That wasn't good enough. They actually looked at a person's life. And and that goes back to this gray area point. If we were being judged by, if we say, "I don't want to go to war," and we had to prove to the authorities that we truly were non-resistance from our heart, That's what I'm talking about. And some of those gray areas actually look different under that light. There cannot, in some of those cases, you know, there were stories that I read about young people even just being rowdy and making trouble in the town, like that kind of stuff, but actually disqualified them. And there's lots of things like that. So really, the way we live our life determines whether we are non-resistant or not. It's not just if we don't kill the thief or if we don't go to war. It's actually in our heart. And that's what I want you to think about. And that's why I want you to keep looking and thinking about what's on the board up there. So what are some practical things that we can fall into that could disqualify us from a conscientious objector status? Abe.
If I would take somebody to the law, would that disqualify me?
All right. I had that one on my list. So if you take someone to the law, does that disqualify you? Why do people take people to the law? What does the law do, Abe?
It would probably make a big difference what you took somebody to the law for. If you call the law because somebody molested your child, it would be very different than if you took somebody to the law to get money or a lawsuit or something
for
of that
personal,
nature.
For personal gain. So what does the law do? When you're talking a lawsuit, Abe, right? You're taking someone to court. What does that... Go ahead, Wayne.
Attempt to bring justice to the situation, I think.
It brings justice to the situation using what? Justice is fine, isn't it? What's wrong with using the law? Isn't it sort of using force? Isn't it resisting evil? Maybe there's someone that has not paid you and you were mowed his lawn all last summer and he didn't pay you. Well, that's not just. So there's somebody, it's Uncle Sam, or in our country, it's not Uncle Sam, that will make him pay. So let's take him to court. That's justice. He has to pay. Well, Jesus said it's better that we suffer wrongfully. Where is that? Now therefore, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 7. Now therefore, there is utterly a fault among you because ye go to law with one another. Why do you not rather take wrong? Why do you not suffer yourselves to be defrauded? There's lots of reasons to go to law. And the law can be a protection. I feel it's different if someone takes me to law. Do you feel that's different? I think it is. If I'm in the wrong, it better not ever go to law, because I need to admit it and settle it up. If I've been doing my job and someone wants to take me to law for doing right, then I think it's fine to go to law and defend yourself. You're not going to sue him for damages when you're all done, but that's different. So yes, I think that does answer your... In my opinion, Abe, going to law would disqualify you, and you're actually willing to use force. You're telling the world that. Was there a hand?
This is a big can of worms. I'm sure you know that. I mean, in Corinthians, the rebuke was between believers. So I don't think you take believers to the law. I totally agree with you that it's different whether you take someone to the law or whether they take you to the law. But, I mean, this gets right down to the... What if... I know a lot of people have done this. You get a speeding ticket. and you were going 40 over. And you actually were. So you take it to the law. Is that non-resistant? Or another one where I may feel that the only recourse I have for the safety of many people is to hand someone over to the law, child molesters and so forth. As a believer, am I not, like, is that something I can't do?
Well, I think that's two different subjects. And the part about if there's an offender, if there's someone out there that is causing havoc, that's going around and stealing gas from everyone's gas tank, and you know who it is, to call the police and say, you know, he's over at 2579 such and such a road, I know that's the guy. What that's doing is it's actually stopping more violence. And, you know, you pick the crime. If we can, using the law to identify, the law is there for our protection. And as long as we're not the aggressor, we actually can use the law for our protection. I feel we can. And 1 Corinthians or Romans 13 is quite clear that the law is there and it's for our protection. We can keep going and going down this trail. Another one I'd like to think about for us today is how can we influence the government, and at what point does that cross the line? What I'm thinking about is, should we be, those of you that are farmers, taking your tractors to Parliament Hill and, you know, blocking the whole area to protest, well, I don't know, we should raise milk prices, or we should you know, have free trade with who knows where. Wayne?
I don't really think so for myself, and yet at the same time, I'm part of an organization that will do that for me, I guess, so it's...
You got it made. All right. So why wouldn't you buy for yourself, Wayne? Why wouldn't you do that for yourself? I know you were taught not to, but why else?
I guess it just doesn't seem like the right thing to do.
It possibly violates some of these principles. All right. Well, think about that. Think about why you wouldn't do that kind of thing. Because I agree, I wouldn't either. I don't feel it would be right. So, is there any way at all that you can influence the government as a non-resistant Christian? Ron.
Well, you brought up farming. I was pondering over that a little bit. In our we live in a bit of a unique thing. When I was in France, I was actually had a meeting with a guy that in France, there's mandatory conscription there. When you turn a certain age, you have to join the army in France. And he couldn't work in his father's factory until he was a certain age and he could retire from the army. And talking to him, that just gave me a whole new perspective on the world. You know, because here we choose to be choosy on a lot of things, but there he had no choice. So I don't know if that changes, that doesn't change the Bible, but it made me think about something that I hadn't thought of. But in farming, we have a democracy, and there are channels set open up for us to petition the government in a peaceful and a democratic way, like the OFA and Christian Farmers Federation, and some people have a conscience against that. I personally am part of the OFA because I believe that's what has been set up for us to, like, you know, in an intelligent way. But driving around with tractors produces a spirit of rowdiness and vengefulness and chaos that I don't think goes with God's people, but mm-hmm. But ultimately a consistent life. The story there was a man that wanted to do, didn't want to go to war, but he had a 14 or 15 points on his driving record. Mm-hmm. And they pulled that and said, you know, you're not non-resistant. You speed every day. And he went to war. I don't know how many of us would go to war because of that small point.
I think a time of war would have us evaluating all of our whole lives, wouldn't it? But basically breaking the law, knowingly breaking the law, is resisting the authority that's set up. So if you're willing to do that, why wouldn't you, you know, why can you resist this authority, but you can't resist against the evil ISIS that's coming to kill us all? I'm just saying that. There's others. What about wishing evil and making loud statements on evil groups, like ISIS, for example? What about saying, oh, I hope that they get them over there, and sort of cheering on the war? I think we've all heard that. And in conservative circles, I think we've felt that too, and especially if we've ever went south of the border, I know we've heard it and felt it in conservative circles. I actually heard some ministers and deacons and older men actually strategizing what should have been done differently in the war in Iraq a few years ago. And I thought, wow. I think that's wrong. I don't think we should do that. I think that tells us that our non-resistance needs some work. Back to the point about protesting. One thing that I think is completely fine is for you to go to your local MP's office and have a conversation with them. There's no harm at all in reasoning with anyone. And even if you get to reason with the Prime Minister and say, look, Justin, if only we could do this, things would be so much better, and these are the reasons why. However, if you decide not to, I'm a Canadian, I'm going to do what you say. You know, something like that is always in our place, and it does not violate the principle of non-resistance at all. All right, our time is disappearing. What I would like to do is talk very quickly, and this will take about 5 minutes, about reasons people don't practice non-resistance. We know, we talked a couple weeks ago, that we are in the minority. Ones that practice complete, true non-resistance are in the very small minority. Well, first of all, reasons people don't practice it is it's really not reasonable. We talked about, or what I mean by that is it doesn't make sense. We can't understand it. If someone is breaking into your house and you're armed, why wouldn't you stop them? You know, it doesn't make sense. The unregenerate man cannot think through that. But that's a non-resistance cannot be reasoned through. It just does not make sense. Something to think about: you as a Christian with a gun in your hand, you know, here comes someone to abuse your children, or, you know, pick the worst thing you can think of, and you kill them. Where does that person go? So where does that abuser go when you kill him? He goes to hell. Is that really our spot? Is it really my job to send people to hell? I don't think so. So think about that too. When you think about the worst thing that could possibly happen and how you would respond to it. It'd be better for me to be killed and go to heaven than for me to kill a bad guy and send him to hell. Another reason people don't practice non-resistance is what I just labeled as Old Testament confusion. And right back to the days of the Reformation, the Reformers believed they believed some things like we do. They believed that that the law was fulfilled. We didn't have to offer sacrifices anymore. But then when it came to things that were allowed in the Old Testament, they felt they were still allowed in the New Testament. And we believe that Jesus fulfilled the law. We believe that Jesus perfected the law. And there are things in the Old Testament that were allowed, and they were part of God's plan, I believe, that are not allowed in the New Testament. And there's a lot of confusion about that. I actually read something this morning. I was not looking for this. Actually, we know some people that are actually trying to follow some of the law. They believe in Jesus, and I can't imagine this mixed up system. But they believe in Jesus, but yet you need to keep the law to really understand Jesus. And one of their friends, I'm just going to read a little thing that I read. People think Jesus showed up and said, and this was a random statement. It wasn't out of a book or anything. And this was Jesus talking. He said, "Oops, our bad. We had a rough several thousand years, so don't pay attention to the old stuff anymore." This is Jesus talking. Well, that's not the case. And people are mixing Old and New Testament all the time, and it just makes confusion, whether it's keeping the law or whether it's taking some of the things that were allowed in the Old Testament. We need to forget about that. We live now in a dispensation of mercy versus the dispensation of justice. As someone else said, God has the right to do that. You can say to your children, if you have young children, that today you may go to the park. The park is right beside our house. Today you may play at the park. Tomorrow when they ask you, you can say, "No, we're not going to play at the park today." That's your privilege as a parent. And God has that same right too. God can say, "Here's the Old Testament and here's the New Testament. Today we're doing it this way." And that's what God did. He actually made what he said the day before. He fulfilled it, and he perfected it in the New Testament. The other reason that people don't practice non-resistance today is they mingle with the government. When you become involved with the government, you have to drop the principle of non-resistance, because the government, at the end of the day, while they like to be peaceful, they will resist. That's what they're there for. God created them that way. And God gives them their authority. So look up sometime the just war theory. The just war theory came up, I believe, by the Catholic Church. And the just war theory makes a lot of sense if you are trying to reason it out. The just war theory says that war is only the last resort. You know, you need to try everything else first, and if that doesn't work, only then can you resort to force. You must fight your war in a good way. You can't kill innocent civilians. Look up the just war theory. It's interesting. Write that down and look it up, because that's what a lot of people believe today, including most professing Christians. And then there's problem texts, and that's not text messages, but that's verses out of the Bible that people confuse. Romans 13, the armed rulers are clearly sanctioned by God, right? Read Romans 13. He beareth not the sword in vain. God gives him his power. So, okay, doesn't that mean us as Christians? Well, no, it doesn't. If you read Romans 13, it's clearly talking about them, and it's clearly talking about us. And if you read the rest of the Bible, I think you can figure that out as well. Another text that causes some confusion is Acts 10 about Cornelius. Cornelius was a centurion, and he became a Christian. So he was a Christian soldier. Luke 3, verse 14. John the Baptist said to the soldier, "What shall we do?" He said, I forget what all he said, "Be content with your wages." He didn't say, beat your sword into a plowshare. And Luke 22, verse 36 is another one that people take, where I believe that's the verse where Jesus said, you know, sell your garment and buy a sword. And so some people, I actually read something that talked about Matthew 5, and it was actually something that backed up this just war theory, where Jesus, it said Jesus clearly wants peace, because in Matthew 5 he said we must be peaceful. But then it said this same Jesus in Luke 22:36 said sell your garment and buy a sword. So in their mind it was clear that Jesus wants peace, but at the end of the day, if you need to buy a sword to carry out justice, then that's what you do. So I'm saying those are problem texts, and I think they are. But when we look at the last point there, Christians base their ethic of non-resistance both on the letter and the spirit of the New Testament. The words, I think, are so clear, but also the spirit of the New Testament is that of peace and is that of taking wrong. Again, look at the example of Jesus. Did Jesus ever molest somebody with a sword and inflict harm? No, I don't think he did. In conclusion, know what the Bible says. Number two, obey the Bible and the spirit of the New Testament, and that will help you sort through the gray areas that we come across. We honestly do. We live in this land, and we come across that kind of thing. Last of all, let's look to Jesus for our example. Hebrews 12, verse 2 says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Look to Jesus for our example, and for our example of life. If we are being tested, look to Jesus as well for how he lived his life under testing. Jesus did not retaliate. Jesus was a perfect example. So if you're tested, Lawrence, you know, that's what I can offer to you. Look to Jesus and any of us as we're tested. There is so much evil and injustice in the world. If a sword would solve it, I don't think God would have said, don't use swords. But a sword will not solve it. A sword can restrain evil, but that's not our job. So as Christians that are trying to follow the Bible, let's look to Jesus and live our lives as Jesus would have lived his life. May God bless you and give you all wisdom in this important area.
Good morning to you all. Before we get into the message, Brother Mike, I've greatly appreciated your studies in the morning on non-resistance, very much so. And I would just like to add a couple of points, not as just maybe as a bit of information, one that could possibly discuss too. We used to have a book back home when I grew up in our library at home. It was called Non-Resistance Under Test, and it was written by a man by the name of Ernie Swam, I think. His last name, and he was from the denomination of the Church of the Brethren, Brethren in Christ, from north of here, a little bit up in the, I'm not sure, Dundalk, Shelburne area, I believe. But he was called up for military duty in the First World War, and that was before they had conscientious objection status. And at that time, each individual young guy had to go in before, well, firstly, they were assigned a place, a military, an army camp that they had to go to and be there at a certain date. And there they would have been issued a military soldier uniform. And it was at that point where they would, like Ernie there, he refused to put on this uniform. He just refused to put it on. He was given some time to do it. He rejected it, wouldn't put it on. He was arrested by the military police and put into military prison. And because at that time there was no conscientious objection status. And he was instrumental then at the latter part of the First World War to set up with the government conscientious objection status, a CO status, that in the last part of the First World War, if my understanding is correct, and into the Second World War, you could come in under that status, and that's where they set up the camp up in the Montreal River at the Second World War, where young men went up there and did their voluntary service there instead of having to go to the war. But what I wanted to say about that is what Mike brought up this morning about these verses in the Bible, in the scriptures that are, they're almost like they would say that, you know, we should be taking up a sword in certain cases and so forth. Ernie Swam, he mentioned that, I remembered, in that book, because the men that the government hired to interview these young guys when they came in and said, I have convictions, I can't go to war, I can't go do any military service. And they would sit down in a room with the government representative to debate their case. Those government representatives, they knew those scriptures. And they'd confront those individuals, and you had to have a strong conviction and know why you could not go to war. You could not just simply say, well, I'm a member of such and such a church, and we're non-resistance, we believe and practice non-resistance. That just did not wash. And if you just simply could not persuade them different, you were either forcefully forced to put on a uniform, meaning there'd be other soldiers that would come and forcefully put you into that uniform, or you'd end up in a military prison. And a military prison is different than a civilian prison. You do not have the rights as a civilian in a military prison. And but in the Second World War, the CO status was there. So one other point I'd just like to make yet too is that growing up in the Anabaptist churches, there was this debate, not really debate, to trying to depict the right way to present this. You could, as a farmer, I could apply to receive government grants, money from the government, to one thing that comes to my mind very quickly here is there's a rural water quality program, and if your farm is on, has a creek in it or whatever, and your manure yard is leaching liquid, this dark liquid running into the stream, you could get government money to help you pay to enhance your manure storage to stop that pollution, so to speak. It was a government handout. It was usually a percentage of what your total cost was. The debate against that was that if you would take those government handouts, that could make you beholden to the government, that when the government under war would put out an enlistment and come for you, and by law would ask you to enlist in the army, and you'd refuse to because of your non-resistant belief, they could have an argument against you, said, well, we helped you out with monetary handouts in these kind of situations. Now we're just simply asking you to help us out. Just a point in there to throw into the pail, I guess, so to speak.